Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Tuesday, the 5th of April, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. Please check out our website. It's a good one. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. We re-air our program from 7 to 8 here on KJLL. The lineup for today's show includes a lead-off interview with the author of a new book titled The Battle to Save Our Schools. At the bottom of the hour, we talk with our consumer affairs contributor, Tom Collier. Then we'll close out the show with a conversation with another of the Tucson candidates for mayor. This time it's a Green Party candidate, John McClain. The Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but there's always room for listener comments and questions. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 529-3508. Well, most national education experts consider Michelle Rhee's reforms as head of schools in Washington, D.C., to have been the most important recent education experiment in the country. After years of debate, school reformers finally settled on teacher quality as the key ingredient to improving student performance. And many say that nobody pushed harder for teacher quality reforms than Michelle Rhee. When she took over the D.C. schools in 2007, the district was tied with Los Angeles as the worst in the country, and yet not a single teacher in the previous year had lost his or her job because of ineffective teaching. A new book chronicles the Michelle Rhee story. The title is The Bee Eater. Michelle Rhee takes on the nation's worst school district. The author is veteran education writer Richard Whitmer, former editorial writer of education for USA Today and the immediate past president of the National Education Writers Association. His previous book, Why Boys Fail, has received wide acclaim, and he joins us now on the Buckmaster Show live line. Mr. Whitmer, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Tell me about why you were attracted to this story.
Well, I thought that Michelle Rhee, in her years coming into D.C., would be trying reforms that the rest of the nation would be trying in coming years. And so I thought if I burrowed in and watched what she did and tried to figure out whether she was on the right track, whether this was working, that would give me a special insight into what governors are, in fact, trying to do right now, and that is focus on teacher quality. That's what she did. And now, state after state, that's what we see the governors doing.
And they're doing it here in Arizona. As you well know, Arizona schools are usually ranked very near the bottom of the pack of the states, and they're trying to turn that around in Arizona by focusing on teacher quality and test performance. Do you think too much emphasis is placed on what we have here in Arizona called the Ames test?
Well, you know, testing is a really, you know, tricky topic. Nobody likes testing, and as President Obama said recently, testing is boring. But, you know, if you're going to have any kind of accountability system, whether it be local or national, you've got to have some kind of testing. If you're teaching algebra, then students should be able to perform simple algebraic equations, and that should be testable. You know, we want students to be literate. If we want them to read, let's say, a newspaper story and understand what that story is all about, then we should be able to put a few paragraphs on paper and ask questions about what was in that text. So, you know, for better or for worse, I think tests are going to be around for a while.
USA Today, your former employer, reported recently on the probability of systematic cheating by administrators and or teachers in Washington, D.C. on the standardized test. This happened, didn't it, while Michelle Rhee was the superintendent?
Yes, the high number of erasures in several schools, I think the schools cover, I've seen like 2% of the district population, that occurred while she was chancellor, and they brought somebody in to investigate it and didn't find anything. Now, USA Today is raising this and saying that the investigators didn't do a good job and that, you know, this needs to be looked at again.
Tell us about Michelle Rhee. What is why did she go to D.C. and to take over as superintendent or as chancellor of schools there, and what was her reign like there?
Well, she's an improbable candidate to take over, that's for sure. She'd never run a school district before and never wanted to. But then when a new mayor came in, Adrian Fenty, he was determined to turn around the schools, which had always been a real problem in D.C. He had the attitude that Washington, D.C. will never be a world-class city until it can reform its schools. And I think basically he's right there, because people just don't want to live there, and then they'll move out or they'll just rely on private schools. So he needed somebody to really shake things up. And he convinced Michelle Rhee to come on board. So she had to be talked into it. She was a reformer. She started out in Baltimore with Teach for America in a really tough school there, Harlem Park Elementary. And that's where the title from the book comes, The Bee Eater, because she was having a terrible time at first. Those kids were just, you know, having her for lunch, if you will. And so one particularly frustrating day, she was getting nowhere, and the kids were all acting out, and it was hot, so she cracked a window, and in flies a bee. Well, you know, all the kids went really nuts then, and they're wandering around, they're running around, knocking over desks, saying, a bee, a bee. So Michelle, just in total frustration, took her now useless lesson plan, whacked the bee, scooped it up in her hand, popped it in her mouth, and swallowed it.
Oh, geez.
And all the kids just looked at her like, wow.
That will get the kids' attention, won't it?
Yeah, maybe this woman's crazy. Maybe we should pay attention to her.
You know, you really get into the personal side of a person on the cover of magazines, or when she appeared on Oprah, always looks so stern, but she's got quite a, as you say, an inner waitress persona.
See, Michelle has this theory that the skills that a waitress, a good waitress possesses, are the skills that the Fortune 500 chairman would need. You need to figure out what people need, when they want it, and how to deliver it effectively. And she had a jobs both in high school and in college, waitressing. And every place she worked, the restaurant owners just loved her, absolutely loved her. So, yeah, that's her inner waitress.
We have certainly a lot of school problems here in Arizona. What do you think some of the lessons that Tucson, especially the Tucson Unified School District, going through some very challenging times at a couple of our high schools here. What are some of the lessons that perhaps we could learn?
Well, it's hard to compare one school district to another. You've got a huge Latino population there with a challenge in languages that is far less found in D.C. It's here, but it's not such a big deal as it is there in Arizona. So it's a little hard to compare school districts, but you know what she did here in D.C. was to conclude that many of the teachers that who had been employed there for years, although they were liked by you know the most of the students and the parents, were not very effective, and that for her to move the school district forward, she had to find more motivated teachers. Especially, she had to find teachers who believed that they could make progress with kids in spite of their race, in spite of the you know whether they come from a single parent family, in spite despite whether they live in poverty, because the belief in D.C. was that poverty and race dictated everything, the belief prior to her coming, and so they were just doing the best they could with these kids, and that's not the case. You know, you can do better, and other school districts have in fact done better.
We're talking with Richard Whitmer. He is the former editorial writer focusing on education for USA Today, and he is the immediate past president of the National Education Writers Association. He's the author of a new book, The Battle to Save Our Schools, A Story from the Front Lines, which really talks about Michelle Rhee's tenure in the Washington, D.C. school system as chancellor. What happened to she has left D.C., correct, Michelle has left?
Right. She really, you know, ran her reforms just really crazy fast. And on the theory that, you know, the, her political popularity would be limited once she was pushing these stiff reforms through. And she was right about that. Her reforms were not well received politically, especially the firings, teacher firings. Teachers didn't get fired in D.C. That's just not what happened. So there was a lot of resentment about that and a lot of opposition. Needless to say, the local union hated her, and the national union weighed in as well. And there were some race issues as well, because it's mostly African-American teachers in the school district. And so when teachers got fired, they were fired roughly in that same proportion. But it was perceived that, you know, Michelle Rhee, this Korean-American woman, was firing black teachers. And it all kind of backfired politically on the mayor and then on Michelle Rhee. When the mayor lost re-election, and I think the schools were the biggest reason, then she was essentially forced to step down. So it all backfired.
She is somewhat of a darling to conservatives, isn't she, and somewhat of a villain to liberals.
Yes, that's a good choice of words. I couldn't agree with you more. The irony, of course, is that she's personally a liberal. And I know that it's frustrating to her in her new venture, the Students First, where she's going around nationally promoting these school reform ideas. I know that it's very frustrating to her that more Democratic governors have not signed on. And she just thinks they lack the guts, that they think they'll get in too much trouble with the unions, with the teachers.
Got about a minute to go here. What would you like the reader to take away from your book, The Battle to Save Our Schools, A Story from the Front Lines?
Well, I think what has played out in a lot of our schools, and it sounds so harsh to say this, is that it's been a decline in teacher quality. 30 years ago, especially among women, the best and brightest women often went into teaching. And that's been true for decades. And then, let's say 25 years ago, a lot more opportunities opened up to women, and the best and the brightest no longer went into teaching. And that's somewhat noticeable in a high-performing suburban district, but when you go into an urban district, it's very noticeable. And this is how the United States differs so much from other countries on international rankings, is that other countries, Korea, Denmark, take their teaching candidates from the very top college graduates, and we take ours from the bottom. And until that gets turned around somehow, we're going to have a teacher quality problem that just has to be dealt with by superintendents who really ignore it.
Richard Whitmer, thank you very much for being with us, author of The Battle to Save Our Schools. Have a great day.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is The Buckmaster Show and buckmastershow.com at 20 minutes now past the hour.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at viroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
And we are coming up now on 24 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show and BuckmasterShow.com. In 2005, research showed that not-for-profit arts and culture were a significant industry in Tucson and Pima County, one that generated nearly $58 million in local economic activity. Now it's time to determine what the current impact of arts are on our region. The Tucson Pima Arts Council is teaming up with a national research group called Economic Prosperity 4 to evaluate the economic impact of arts in our community. And joining us on the Buckmaster Show is Roberto Bedoya, the executive director. Roberto, good to see you.
Good morning.
I remember when we first interviewed, or I interviewed you over on TV about 5 years ago when you came to this community. You were touting, and I think everybody with TPAC was saying, you know, that survey that came out was really great news. Art's certainly a big player. Then 2008, the stock market and the economy went south. And I really wonder now what we're going to see with some of these numbers.
I wonder myself. I think the economy has impacted all of us in all sectors. In the cultural sector, it's been significant, obviously, because we're a nonprofit. We operate in the nonprofit arena. We depend on private foundations and public fundings. So everything is shifting. But I think what I hope to discover is that we've been adaptable, that this data that we're gathering shows that we're as robust as ever, and that, you know, our attendance hasn't really tanked.
We're still an arts community, aren't we?
We're very much an arts community. I think this report allows us to quantify sort of our economic activity, shows how much each individual pays to go to, not just the price of admission, but like how much money they lay out in terms of dinner or parking or babysitting. So we can get an accurate picture of the economic engine that the cultural sector is.
Give us an overview of how your funding has decreased with this economy going down as far as governmental agencies contributing to the Tucson Pima Arts Council.
Well, we've been hit pretty hard. I don't want to be a crybaby and say that we're no different than anybody else. However, you know, we've lost 64.5% of our public funding from the city. my county, I also receive money from the counties, and it hasn't been as deep. And the state has also been sort of reduced as well. So my public funding has decreased. However, I've been pretty successful, and the Arts Council has been pretty successful in forming partnerships to remedy that loss. A couple with one insignificant that's significant is with the Kresge Foundation out of Michigan, which brought in $200,000 to our community to allow us to continue doing the work that we do, which is to support artists and arts organizations and what they give to our community.
Has this, I would assume, the bad economy has really hurt some of the galleries downtown, and have we lost some galleries due to the recession?
We have.
Or are they hanging in there?
They're hanging in there. Let me also sort of be specific about the report that we're doing.
Go ahead.
This is looking at the economic impact of the nonprofit sector. Okay. We're also involved in a brand new research project called the Local Arts Index, and we'll have that information available in the fall, which actually looks at the number, doesn't try to capture economic impact data, but it looks at the number of galleries that we have, whether they're nonprofit or for-profit, the number of theaters we have, so we can get a sense of how robust we are, and then we can sort of look at the vitality of our community in comparison to other communities.
The nonprofits have really been hit hard.
They've been hit extremely hard. I have to applaud, though, our organizations and how nimble they have been, how individuals have come forward to help deal with these losses. I suspect, though, I mean, and this is one of the benefits of this report, that attendance figures haven't gone down. We know that in times of stress, people want to enjoy, you know, what is beautiful in our community, and that is often the arts.
Give us an overview of TPAC. Who are some of the nonprofits that you represent?
I run the gamut from the large to the small, to the Tucson Museum of Art, Arizona Theater Company, Borderlands Theater, Safos, which is a brand new Latino dance company, Chax Press, the Drawing Center.
You've got a huge portfolio.
I've got a huge portfolio. And in good years, when we had really a lot of public support behind us, I would fund 60 organizations. Right now, this last year, I was able to fund 38. So this, you know, but everybody is you know, fierce in their nimbleness, trying to figure out a way to move forward.
We're coming up now on 29 past the hour. I've got just a few seconds left. Give us a quick overview, your own background. You came to Tucson from?
From the Bay Area, though my father was born here. And I've known Tucson for quite a while. But I love this place.
And it is an arts, always been known as an arts mecca. And there's a lot of arts tourism, isn't there, in this community?
Yes, there is. And I think we're trying to grow our cultural tourism sort of portfolio, for lack of a better word. And we have some ideas afoot, and the MTCBB, the Convention Bureau, has been great in promoting our cultural assets.
Roberto Badoya, the Executive Director of the Tucson Pima Arts Council, good luck. We'll be talking to you soon about hopefully get some results on the study.
Very good.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This is the Buckmaster Show, and buckmastershow.com coming up the bottom of the hour now.
Something on your mind?
The time has come for all of us to speak out.
Call in and let us know.
Now start talking.
Talk about how you feel.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Andy Rose. Republicans are releasing a new spending plan they say would cut $6 trillion in spending over a decade. Congressman Paul Ryan says he and the new Tea Party members know it won't be popular, and they don't care.
Look at these people. Look at these new people who just got here. You know, they didn't come here for a political career.
That's right.
They came here for a cause. This is not a budget. This is a cause.
At the same time, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner is warning that whatever happens with the budget this week, Congress would cause a disaster if it doesn't raise the debt ceiling soon.
As all my predecessors have said, the consequences of that would be catastrophic to the United States.
Once it hits the ceiling, the government will start defaulting on its debts. Tornadoes and high winds caused serious damage in several southeastern states overnight. 8 people died. The roof was torn off of a factory in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. The most trusted name in news, this is CNN Radio.
My dad's Mercedes E-Class has 26,000 miles on it, but I'm taking it to a billion zillion.
Of all the things you hand down to your children, very few will be of the quality of a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz. Come in during our certified pre-owned sales event and get the Mercedes-Benz you've always wanted. Now, with an optional factory-backed extended limited warranty, your vehicle may be covered for up to 7 years or 135,000 miles, plus roadside assistance and 3 months of Sirius satellite radio. Every certified pre-owned vehicle undergoes rigorous inspections by factory-trained technicians to meet the uncompromising standards of Mercedes-Benz. And right now, get exceptional 1.99% financing on select models.
Thanks in advance, Dad.
Hurry into the Mercedes-Benz certified pre-owned sales event now through May 2nd. And remember, if it's not at your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer, it's not certified pre-owned.
See dealer or call 1-800-FOR-MERCEDES for complete program including certified pre-owned limited warranty and Sirius satellite radio details and limitations. Not all customers will qualify for advertised APR and are subject to prior credit approval.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinker Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinker Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanker Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tanker Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson community. Our thrift shop donations and sales provide more than half of needed funding, which goes to programs like Operation School Bell. Since its inception, Operation School Bell has provided clothing and school supplies for more than 38,000 children. But we need your help. Donate an item or a financial gift. Shop our thrift store or volunteer. For more information on how you can make a difference, visit AssistanceLeagueTucson.org.
Coming up now on 36 Minutes Past the Hour on the Buckmaster Show and BuckmasterShow.com. Once a month, we like to check in with Tom Collier. Mr. Collier, the Buckmaster Show contributor on consumer affairs. Tom, good to see you.
Good to be here, Bill.
Everybody's making a rush to their local health food store. Do you have potassium, whatever it is.
Potassium
pills.
Iodide.
Oh, my goodness.
Potassium iodide. Yeah, we need to talk about that because potassium iodide pills are being hawked on the internet now and elsewhere as radiation sickness prevention medication, or even worse, radiation sickness cures in the wake of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster in Japan. And the scammer's pitch gets more and more shrill now that radioactive contaminants from that plant are being detected on our West Coast. They're out in full force, and they use fear, loathing, and ignorance to separate you from your money. And not only does it damage your pocketbook, it could damage your health. So what I want to do now is go into a little bit of educational background. I'm going into professorial mode right now.
Well, it can damage your health. And yeah. Our dear friend who I've worked with many years in the business is the Voice of America correspondent who has been covering the nuclear disaster in Japan. His name is Steve Herman, and Steve was telling me, hey, if you're over 50, those pills, even if you were at the site, would do you no good.
Right, right. Well, iodine is a micronutrient that's essential for human health, and iodine deficiency is one of the primary causes of mental retardation in developing children. We know it in this country because lack of iodine used to cause goiters, problems in the thyroid gland. There were big pouches that would develop under people's chins. Seafood is the most provides the most iodine nutritional requirements, but in landlocked countries and areas of the United States which didn't have access to good seafood, it was a problem. Since the 1920s, table salt has been treated with iodized salts, and it's the major source of nutritional iodine in the United States. It's primarily taken up in the thyroid gland, iodine is, and the thyroid can't differentiate between nutritional iodine and radioactive iodine and its isotopes. So let's go back to Fukushima now. One of iodine's 30-plus radioactive isotopes is iodine-131. It's a significant component of uncontrolled radiation releases during a nuclear accident, and it's one of the first nasty elements to affect human health during a radiation leak. After the Three Mile Island nuclear disaster in 1979, health researchers in this country developed a preventative protocol for use during nuclear accidents. People near the disaster zone take a high level of potassium iodide, and the purpose is to fill up the thyroid gland with iodine so that it can't absorb any of the radioactive iodine-131 isotope when or if it drifts over you. And this is only used in about a 30-mile radius of these particular disasters, what this protocol is for. Now, potassium iodide is widely sold as a nutritional supplement, but at very low dosages, and the recommended daily allowance from the USDA is only 15 micrograms.
Wow.
Micrograms so, per day. That's really small.
Yeah, that is very small. And so are the people buying the small doses that are buying the stuff at the health food stores?
Well, that's what the health food stores sell, because pharmaceutical levels of potassium iodide require a prescription. And this is the kind that's used in this nuclear disaster plan. It's compounded at a dosage level that ranges from 300 to 3,000% of the recommended daily allowance. So now let's get back to the scammers. They know people are frightened of radiation.
Yeah.
They use fear and loathing. They play on and on that fear. And the words potassium iodide, by the way, are in the top 10 search phrases of the internet search
engines
this week.
Are they right now?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. So we know people are frightened out there, and they're looking at this possibility. The scammers are more than willing to sell you a supplement level of potassium iodide and falsely claim that it will prevent radiation sickness, or even worse, cure it. And we've seen individual tablets of supplement-level potassium iodide on sale on the internet for $49 each per tablet, plus shipping.
You got to be kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
$50
and remember,
plus shipping for
remember,
one tablet?
For one tablet, yeah. And then you got to remember, nearly any salt shaker in this city can provide you with that level
of iodine.
And it's certainly cheaper than $49 a pill. Pharmaceutical level iodine, on the other hand, potassium iodide, on the other hand, is a completely different story. You do need a prescription, and if you get your hands on it, there's a pitfall bill. This preventative protocol has to be done right. And if it's not done right, you actually create the risk of thyroid cancer developing in your body years down the road. It's got to be done right.
So this is, Tom,
that's what the scammers won't tell you.
Tom Collier is with us. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on consumer affairs. Bottom line, this is very serious stuff if you start dealing with some of these pills.
Well, Do you remember
if you were
about,
taking the prescription, certainly, and didn't need to take
You need a prescription in this country, but of course we're only an hour from Mexico, and I know the people out there who are self-medicating and thinking this is a good idea are thinking about heading to Mexico where it may or may not be a prescription-level drug. Don't know. I haven't had a chance to research that. But you remember about 10 years ago during the anthrax scare when people were trucking wheelbarrow loads of Cipro over the border from Nogales and overdosing or themselves on that. The important thing to remember here is that the scammers are not going to tell you anything that could damage your health in the long run. They want to get your money now. And I guess the easiest way to wrap this discussion up is to sort of modify that old adage by saying the patient who self-medicates in this particular situation has a fool for a doctor.
Good advice. And we should point out that slight traces of this fallout from the plants has been turning up across the country, and that's what's really been...
Well, that's true. And one of the things about radioactive iodide-131 is it only has an 8-day half-life. So it's going to deteriorate and become the radiation level will become lower and lower over the course of time. Now, it doesn't take very long with atmospheric winds and things like that for it to be detected on this side of the country. But this is, again, a protocol which was developed for use with people who, say, lived within a 30-mile radius of Three Mile Island, or people who live within a 30-mile radius of a nuclear plant that might have an accident. This is not anything you want to mess with your own self-medication concerns, as I said, because there's a danger that you wind up creating the potential for thyroid cancer on down the line. And you don't want to feel good now and feel bad later.
There you go. 43 minutes now past the hour on Buckmaster Show and buckmastershow.com. Tom Collier is with us. He's our consumer affairs contributor. Tom, we need to talk about what's going on in Washington in the remaining couple of minutes. The talk is turning pretty serious about a government shutdown on Friday. I know we talked a bit about this last month. Bring our listeners up to date. What does it mean for those that depend on Social Security or other governmental checks?
That's the big question. No one really knows. It may mean that you get your check. It may mean that you don't get your check. It may mean that you get your payment. It may mean that you don't get your payment. Our advice last month when we talked about this is to prioritize your payments. And the main thing you want to do is if you have to make a credit card payment and you've got a good record with your credit card company and you have a nice low interest rate, you may want to consider making the minimum payment so that you don't trigger those penalty rates, because that's a gift that keeps on giving to the banks or to the credit card issuers. So as you sit down and prioritize those payments, I hope people have enough money, but statistics show that they don't. To even get through a month, most people live from paycheck to paycheck. I think we said 77% according to the statistics last month when we were discussing this. But I would suggest if you don't get that check and you've got to dip into your savings and you've got to minimize, you know, begin to cut back on expenses, don't scrimp on the credit card payment. Don't skip it. Make the minimum payment so that at least you don't trigger those penalty rates, because they will stay with you. The credit card companies used to say if you had 6 months of good behavior, they'd consider giving you a lower rate again. Those days are gone. That's fantasy land. That won't happen.
You will get your check, though, even if they're delayed. I mean, it's not like they will.
Gosh, I hope so. That's a question for John Kyle or John Kenny,
yeah,
I think
the last time the shutdown happened, I don't remember whether they sent out checks or not. It's been many, many years.
Well, the last time the shutdown happened, they were paper checks. Uh-huh. Most people now get electronic direct deposit.
Right. So make sure you, whatever you do, don't start getting yourself deeper in debt on the credit card bills.
That's the first law of holes. When in one, stop digging.
Tom Collier, it is good to see you. Tom
Thanks,
is
Bill.
Our consumer affairs reporter on the Buckmaster Show, and we are going to come up on 45 minutes past the hour. Next on Buckmaster Show and buckmastershow.com, a man who is running for the mayor of Tucson will talk with John McClain. That's next.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of 5 major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Cunada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
It's 48 minutes now past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster. Well, the race for Tucson mayor is getting a bit more crowded as businessman and Army veteran John McClain files as a Green Party candidate. Mr. McClain is a political newcomer, and he hosts a weekly radio talk show called the Green Revolution Radio. Mr. McClain, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about yourself, why you decided to run for mayor as a Green Party candidate.
Well, the big thing that I saw is I did a lot of research once I realized the three council positions were available and mayor, and all through the line with the mayoral candidates, it definitely didn't seem like we had a mayor that really knew how to put together a plan that was going to, you know, for lack of a better word, save Tucson from the condition that it's in.
And what was your plan? What do you think you could bring to the table?
Well, like you said, I've been a business owner here in Tucson for quite a while. Sustainability is what my businesses mainly are in. So pretty much as far as putting together a plan that's sustainable, whether we're talking about education, economics, local jobs, that's the future. We can't continuously have these plans that are meant for five-year fixes. We have to have a system that will continuously feed itself.
What kind of sustainability businesses are you in?
Water conservation for swimming pools and landscaping. I do reverse osmosis distribution, rainwater harvesting. I'm a little bit of an electrician, so I like to play around with photovoltaics. So definitely, you know, kind of a slew of things. I could probably go on and on for another 5 minutes.
John McClain is with us. Mr. McClain is a Green Party candidate, and he's running for mayor. What are the race in this race do you see as the big issue right now?
The economy's is the, you know, the head of the forefront for most people. I mean, those people that are losing their homes, those people that every single week or every single month are stressing about where they're going to find the money to pay their bills. I mean, that's the first issue. If you lose your house, nothing else matters. So definitely taking a look at that and finding an answer within there, I think that's where you're really going to gain most people's constituency.
What do you think about downtown redevelopment?
Well, much like I say with everything else, it's all about sustainability. The Rio Nuevo project, obviously, with all the investigation that's going on, it wasn't a very good plan. It didn't take sustainability in mind whatsoever. I'm not quite sure what they had in mind when they put that together. But Tucson has an essence of sustainability, an essence of alternative energy, of real outside the box thinking idealism. If we were to show that in downtown, then we can bring in tourism from all other places. And number one, we can really bring our community together. And I think that's the most important thing that we face here in Tucson.
Talk to me about sustainability. When you say sustainability, what do you mean?
Well, when I talk about sustainability, there's so many different areas. When I talk about sustainability in education, we're talking about getting children more engaged and making it so they actually enjoy school. When we're talking about sustainability with jobs, we're talking about jobs that will continuously regenerate themselves or actually generate new jobs. When we're talking about economics, we're talking about reducing people's electricity bill, water bill, their grocery bill, their gas bill. So sustainability has a lot of different faces. It's just a matter of what you're applying it to.
With economics, how would it apply?
Well, with local economics, a good example I always like to use is here in Tucson, we have over 300,000 homes. More than 290,000 of them aren't quote-unquote LEED certified. What that is, it's a whole bunch of different variables that decide whether your house is environmentally friendly or healthy. If we were to even get 5% of those homes LEED certified that we have that aren't LEED certified now, we're talking about creating over 1 million jobs.
And so many of these homes are older stock, over mm-hmm. 50 years old. A lot of that's a problem, isn't it?
It is a problem, and with most homes, much like most people's vehicles, the first start is fixing those things within the house that aren't efficient, those things that have been broken or leaking for the longest time, but you feel like, I'll just wait a little while till I fix that.
Would you mind talking a little bit about what folks can do to make their home a little more sustainability or sustainable friendly or whatever, green friendly?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty easy. A lot of people think, well, I guess it's the same with a lot of things. It's either all or nothing, but it doesn't have to be that way. It's a step-by-step process. I mean, the first step is get energy-efficient light bulbs, have an energy auditor come through. Usually it's very, very inexpensive to see what different changes you can make in your house. Make sure that you're constantly checking your faucets and checking underneath the sink. Make sure nothing's leaking. Don't take as long of showers as maybe you usually would. When you leave the room, turn off the lights. And I mean, it's thousands of different things, little things that you can do till eventually you get to that point when you realize I've really helped myself out a lot by making all these little steps.
How do you make yourself very attractive to Republican and Democratic voters? So many times, it's a stereotype when people see the Green yeah. Party label. You know,
granola, tree hugger, absolutely hippie. But yeah. You see me, I'm not a hippie.
No, you're not a hippie. You look rather preppy, in fact, today, Mr. McClain. And I would say that, what do you say? How do you kind of get rid of that label?
Well, I think across the lines, kind of like I mentioned a second ago, the main thing that everybody cares about is their pocketbook and their money. And I think the thing that obviously that they're seeing, because both McCluskey and Roethlisberger touch on it, is the relation between consumption and cost. If you reduce your consumption, your expenses go down. So, I mean, that's an idea that everybody can get on, and luckily I have a plan that can actually make that a possibility for everybody.
So you're separating yourself from Mr. Rothschild, the Democrat, and Mr. McCluskey, the Republican, by what would be the defining issue that would separate you from those two candidates?
I actually have plans. I actually have a way to facilitate the plan when it's not just an idea.
Give us an idea. Tell us about the plan.
Well, one of the examples was the creating jobs in Tucson. That's certified. Another plan, as far as our education system, getting the kids more engaged, use the tools that they are familiar with. Nowadays, we have two type of kids. We have 21st century kids, and we have no kids left behind kids. If we were able to bring those kids on the same level with 21st century using the internet, using Facebook, using MySpace, whatever we have that they're already engaged with, that they love and spend hours and hours every day on.
How about this all mail-in voting that the council is now discussing?
Yeah, we were talking about that during the break. I'm not a big fan of it. Already within our system, not only voting, there's a lot of fraud, there's a lot of foul play, and I think with mail-in voting, we're looking at another piece of that.
It is to save money, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of ways to save money other than mail-in voting, because even with that mail-in voting, you're using paper, you're using stamps, you're using gas. There is some costs involved with doing that.
Let's talk about some of the other issues certainly facing the city. The economic situation has been very bleak over the past couple of years. What can be done to generate more money for the city of Tucson?
With the city of Tucson, the city itself, let's look at the public services, mm-hmm. whether it's our garbage services or removing roadkill from the ground, the system's not sustainable. There's so much loss in time, so much loss in energy, and so much loss in money in the way that we're doing it now. So someone, me supposedly, needs to brush through every single system and give it a sustainable eye. For the longest time here in Tucson, even though we have that essence, we don't plan things with sustainability in mind, but that should be our first step.
How about the modern streetcar? Do you think that will bring development along the route?
I don't.
You
don't? I don't. No, I really, I mean, I like the idea, and I'm happy for the people that it does help out, but $119 million could be better spent otherwise.
But it would seem that this is a kind of a way to get people out of their cars. And as a sustainability guy, I'm a little surprised you're not on board.
Well, there's other ways to get people out of their cars. You know, get them on bikes, get them on foot. All these, I want to say, hundreds of neighborhoods we have in Tucson, make them more of a vibrant, livable community with entertainment, with good commuting, with close relationships with their neighbors in comparison to, I mean, how many people north of Glen are going to go down and ride that streetcar? Probably not that many.
John McClain is talking with us on the Buckmaster Show. He is the Green Party candidate for mayor. How are you going to structure your campaign? Have you thought about what is your tactic going to be to get elected?
Connectivity. I think I do something that a lot of politicians don't do. I'm very, very responsive and very easy to get a hold of. And I every day I'm going out there making sure I'm introducing myself to new groups and introducing new groups to each other.
Tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from, and a little bit about your education and your background.
I grew up more or less in Chandler, Arizona. I moved here to Tucson when I was 18 years old. I attended Pima Community College right as I first got here. Short after, about 18 and a half, 19 years old, I joined the military. Excuse me. I went to basic training and job training immediately after joining the military, and got home, and 6 days later they told me I had to go to Iraq.
Oh.
So I went to Iraq. I spent 18 months there, and I came home. After seeing everything that went down in Iraq and the harshest conditions that one could ever imagine, not only for the people that lived there but myself, I realized whatever businesses I was involved in, I had to give a sustainable eye. And that's exactly what I've been doing, fighting for water advocacy for the past 10 years.
Mr. McClain, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll look forward to having a conversation with you and perhaps pitting you with Mr. McCluskey and Mr. Rothschild, the three of you sitting down. That'd be fun.
We'll have some coffee afterwards. That'd be great.
That would be fun. Okay, thank you so much, and have a great day.
I appreciate it, Bill.
Thanks a lot. It's 59 minutes now past the hour. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger, and Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers and Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. And speaking of mayor, we'll have the mayor of the city of Tucson with us tomorrow. Bob Walkup will be here among other guests, along with Bishop Gerald Kakanis will be also on the program, and our Trio CEO series. Have a great day.
Let's do it.
This is Tucson's Jolt.
It's strange and wonderful.
You have a firm grasp of the obvious.
KJLL, South Tucson.